and Nita's Head as a radar station was split into two squadrons for operations purposes, bearing in mind that it's a small RAF station in comparison to others, a very small place, and its primary role is as a radar station. It has no other function. No RAF personnel actually live on the base. They are living elsewhere in the surrounding area, and RAF bases close by, mostly Coltishall. And the whole of the operation at Nita's Head is geared towards maintaining the integrity of the southern part of the United Kingdom airspace. Control of air defence aircraft in their role as interceptors in intercepting would-be hostile aircraft or identifying unknown aircraft. But that role was not an everyday role. The everyday role was a routine one of maintaining the integrity of the airspace by recognising all the aircraft flying in the sky and making sure that they were flying from A to B in the route that they'd been planned to fly. And that was the thrust of the job. Mm. I was a member of two squadron, Y-Watch. Each squadron was split into two watches, and the watches were something which was used to maintain 24-hour personnel to be available to cover the radar picture. And each squadron was commanded by a squadron leader, as I've said, and my commander was a squadron leader called Mike Shields, who was supported by a lot of other RAF officers, from junior officer ranks as pilot officers, flying officers and flight lieutenants, whose job as air defence controllers was to control air defence aircraft in interceptions and the recognising of unknown aircraft when the quick reaction alert aircraft were launched in response to these threats or presumed threats. Nita's Head was a RAF station, but obviously being part of the RAF, it was part of NATO, and NATO across the board, whether it's Army, Air Force or Navy, have a process whereby personnel from the individual air forces in this case would have tours of duty in or on stations or bases in another's air force. So at Nita's Head we had a number of American Air Force officers on exchange postings, and my watch commander actually on Y Watch was a Captain Bud Horan, who was an American Air Force officer, a Texan and a very nice gentleman. I was an airman, a senior aircraftsman in Y Watch, and periodically through my service at Nita's Head I would be allocated to watch duties. That would mean that I would do 4 days on and 4 days off. On the 4 days on, you'd do two 12-hour day shifts, then two 12-hour night shifts. And the other squadron's watch would be manning the radar station and the ops room when you're off duty. And so there would be lots of people when the squadron were on duty, either earlies or lates, and a few people to maintain a basic skeleton crew when it was quiet, when there was no military air defence flying. And that crew was responsible for maintaining the integrity of the air defence of the southern half of the UK, recognising all the aircraft airborne and providing a crew should we suddenly find ourselves in a position where we're at war or an unknown aircraft turns up, or as happened, Russian spy planes came over, and you were there to give the basic service requirement to carry out the air defence and control aspect of taking a fighter aircraft from its base to its interception with an unknown aircraft, and whatever the outcome of that may have been. As part of the job of maintaining the integrity, the safety of the United Kingdom air defence environment, it's absolutely essential that radar coverage is maintained, because otherwise there's going to be holes in the radar coverage, and at a sensitive time between east and west, it's absolutely imperative that you maintain that safety. So the radar that RAF Nitas had was in fact two radars, both of which were main air defence primary radars, and they were working night and day together, and at any one time you could change from one radar to the other on the radar tube on your screen in front of you, of which there were many in the ops room, many screens, all involved with doing different specific jobs to maintain this air defence safety. And I actually know for a fact that these radars...
Have they got a name?
Yes, there's the Type 84 and the Type 85 radar. And also at Nitas Head there was height finding radars whose job was specifically involved in checking the height of aircraft, and they were called HF200 height finding radars. So these two radars are working together. If there was routine planned maintenance to them, or if one went wrong, which as all equipment does from time to time, and military equipment being no different from any other things, they do go wrong. But you don't have two things going wrong at the same time. The planned maintenance would be planned so that one radar was operational while the other was, for a brief period of time, maintained to its full operating capacity, then switched back on again. But all these radars form the defence network, and all the aircraft which these radars pick up are recorded. All the radars are filmed, and that would be for the obvious reasons. If there was an incident or a problem, the factors involved in that problem could be traced and tracked and looked at and analysed. So it's imperative that the radar picture is recorded, and that's not just for incidents or emergencies or problems, it's also for purposes such as training, because if you're going to let lots of people loose on real situations, it's best that they train from what's gone before, and radar tapes are no different. But all radar is recorded. Nitas Head sent its radar picture to other establishments, and one of which was RAF Watton Eastern Radar, which was an air traffic establishment, which is distinct from air defence radar. Air traffic, in my understanding, were involved in the transit of an aircraft from one place to another, and also the taking off and landing of those aircraft. Aircraft involved in defence of the realm, interceptions, and ancillary aircraft integral to maintaining that capability, such as airborne early warning aircraft or tankers to refuel aircraft in flight, also fall under the air defence umbrella. So the two are separate but interlinked. With regard to the Rendlesham incident, obviously I'd been aware of that for a number of years through reading about it, and I've had an interest in that during that time, but felt that I personally didn't have anything to add to the incident of a UFO landing at RAF Bentwaters / Woodbridge. But I had information or a knowledge of some happenings from my Air Force times. Whether they were linked was hard for me to say, or if I felt I had something to say, it was of such a low level of importance to my opinion at the time that I felt, oh well, that's interesting, and just followed the story the same as anybody else. But it wasn't until the end of August, when reading UFO magazine and the article written by Georgina Bruni stating that the MOD had released information regarding the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, mentioning RAF Neatus Head and RAF Watton and the radar station, and the fact that the radar camera was switched off at RAF Neatus Head, and coincidentally the radar tapes from RAF Eastern at Watton had been processed with a very poor ineligible result, I find absolutely unacceptable. Bearing in mind, this happened at a time when the backdrop was the Cold War, air defence of our country and of NATO was very, very important. UFO flap and the MOD had come down to take away the radar tapes.
Now let's just qualify this again. Although you can't be certain of the actual date, you know it's Christmas.
Yes, this is 21 years ago. It wasn't a major deal. I'm perhaps no different from anybody else in society to remember exactly dates and times 20-odd years ago is a very difficult thing to do, bearing in mind that that particular date or dates of the so-called occurrences at Bentwaters and Woodbridge, for me, would not have meant anything to me at the time. It is inconceivable that the RAF would not have had their radar cameras working on at least one of the radars, perhaps not of Neatus Head, but of another establishment. There would definitely be film of radar of that incident of that time. And
tell us how the room was, you know, what was the discussion? Who was talking about this? Was it the NCOs, were the officers, or was it just ordinary air crew? Were they talking about any specifics? How, for instance, did this rumour start, or this claim emerge about taking the radar tapes?
I'm not sure how it came about.
Well, I mean, was it talk as you went into the ops room, or was it talk over the canteen table?
It would have been a combination of all those, bearing in mind that there would have been a Christmas break at Neatus Head at that time for the main squadron duties, but a watch system would have operated. But for the bulk of the personnel on the squadrons, they would have come back to Neatus Head after the Christmas break period, and full of the same talk as anybody else in any walk of life. Did you have a nice Christmas? All the rest of it. But within that, there was rumours spoken about. It would be my nickname in the Air Force was Swiller Baker. For some reason, it would be, "Hello, Swill. Have you heard there's been a big UFO flap on, and the MOD's been down and taken away the radar pictures?" And that could have happened in the crew room during a tea break, or a quiet period in the ops room, or on the bus on the way to work.
But from where you're sat now, although we're talking about events almost 21 years ago, you can sit there now and look at that camera and tell people that that is exactly what was said at that time.
Yes, and it wasn't just one or two people. There was lots of people talking about it. I've recently been in contact with an old colleague of mine who served on two squadron with me during that period. I haven't spoken to him for 15 years. I contacted him through his mum's address, who I happened to have visited 20 years ago, and she still lived at the same part of London, and I got the telephone number of my friend Mr. X. I'm not going to give his name because he hasn't given me permission to at this time, but he remembers exactly the same rumours. And when I discussed it with him, I didn't make any connections with the Rendlesham Forest thing at the time. I just asked him if he'd had any recollection of a UFO flap and the MOD coming, etc. And he did have that recollection in the same degree of accuracy as myself. Not pinned down or honed to a specific time, date, person, etc., but a memory from a period, and that would be from that period. Seeing UFOs for the average person in the street isn't an everyday occurrence.
And
at least it isn't for me.
Yeah.
And same with radar pictures. They don't appear all over the place, and when they do, it gets talked about. I believe I've maintained and upheld the spirit of the Official Secrets Act. I've decided to say what I'm saying now on the strength of the MOD releasing information. If they chose to release what I consider to be the wrong information, I feel it's incumbent on me to offer an alternative view from the standpoint of an ordinary serving member of an establishment that would be involved in air defence aspects. And for the MOD to say that UFOs are of no defence consideration is absolutely ludicrous, because if something lands next to an airbase, whether it's RAF or USAF, and that base has nuclear weapons on board, excuse me, that's very, very serious, and it is of defence significance. And I want to say, however small my part in this was, that the MOD probably and almost certainly are being economical with the truth, or at worst lying through their teeth, and are withholding information on this. And I have no doubt that there is radar pictures of the event, and possibly others outside of my knowledge as well.